Good morning. Welcome to each one of you. I know we're all grieving the loss of Paul. He was mentioned multiple times. He was our friend and our brother, and we're going to miss him a lot, but I'm thankful also that we have that hope that Paul and all those that have gone on before, we have a hope that we'll see them again someday if we're faithful. This morning, I'd like to look at Proverbs chapter 3. Verses 5 and 6. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." This here is a promise of guidance. God will direct our paths if we fulfill the conditions. And the condition is that we need to trust in the Lord and lean not on our own reason and intelligence. And it doesn't say that we shouldn't use our reason and intelligence, but we shouldn't depend on it. And we also need to acknowledge God in all ways, and that means that we'll obey God in everything he reveals to us, and then he'll direct our steps. And the opposite of trusting in God is if we trust in ourselves and in our flesh. And that's when we become proud. And so I wanted to look at the life of Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel and just look at some of the differences of their two lives. So I know the story of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar is pretty familiar to us, but Daniel, he came to Babylon when he was about 17 years old. And first of all, when they got there, he was among some of the people that they chose to bring back into their kingdom. One of the things that Daniel and his friends did is they purposed in their hearts that they would not defile themselves with the portion of the king's meat. And so they asked to have a 10-day trial period. And after that, where they would just eat pulse and they wouldn't eat the king's meat and wine. And at the end of those 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter and better than the others did. So they allowed them to continue doing that. And as the story goes on, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And one thing I missed to say is that they also, when they asked Daniel and his friends questions, they found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm as far as their answers and the wisdom that they had. So Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he couldn't remember what his dream was, and he wanted them, the magicians and the Chaldeans, to tell him what it was, and they really didn't know. And he offered lots of gifts, and he said, they told him that there's not a man on the earth that can show the king what this is, if you can't even tell us what your dream was. And the king got furious about it. And he said that all the wise men would be slain and their house made it like a dunghill if they couldn't tell him what this meant. And Daniel heard about this because they came to gather all the wise men together. And he's like, "Hey, if you give me some time, I'll give you the answer." And he told the king that. And so he went back to his friends, and they prayed to God. And in a vision, God told Daniel what the dream was. And so when he came to King Nebuchadnezzar, he told him that this secret, he said the same things that the magician said. He said, this secret that you demand, there's nobody that can show this to the king, except there's a God in heaven that can reveal secrets. And he said that this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than living. And he went on to say that the only reason is that he can say it is because of God revealing it to him. So he went on, told him the dream, and he said about a statue that had a gold upper body, and it had breasts and arms of silver, and a belly and thigh of brass, and legs of iron, and the feet were part iron and part clay. And so he went on to say how that a rock came and hit this image, and it fell and crumbled, and that the kingdom is going to crumble. And so Nebuchadnezzar was like, hey, I'm going to make an all-gold image because I want my kingdom to last forever. So he set up this big golden image, and he gathered all the people together out of his province, the governors and everybody together. And they were supposed to bow down to this, and we all know what happened. There was three young men that they didn't bow. They didn't compromise. They stood, and they didn't bow down, and it made the king Nebuchadnezzar furious. And so he made the furnace seven times hotter, and they threw them in. And when they threw them in, it even made the men that threw them in, they died because of the heat. And then King Nebuchadnezzar saw the men standing in the furnace, and he saw a fourth person in there with them, and it was God. And he was astonished, and he was like, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they got him out, and then he made a decree that anybody, therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province. You see, from him, he's a pretty drastic guy. If something doesn't work his way, he's drastic with his consequences. And if something goes his way, or when he wants something, he makes it drastic. Then he had another dream of a tree. And in this dream, once again, Daniel interpreted what the dream would mean. And it was that he was going to be removed from the kingdom. And there came a time, and it's where the king was standing in his palace, and he said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? And while he was speaking that, a voice came from heaven and said, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And from that moment, they drove him away, and he lost his mind, and he was like a beast of the field out in the fields for 7 years, until finally God gave him his reason back. And it says, now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and in his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. So just a couple things that I thought of about as I think of Nebuchadnezzar's pride. if we're a proud person, our self is in the forefront, and it's not God. So I'm going to just write self here. So in our story, one of the things that we see is he had an elevated opinion of himself. I'm probably writing a little small. He was imagining his kingdom as lasting forever. And when Daniel had told him that dream about the kingdom having, or that statue or that image having silver and bronze and clay, he was like, hey, he wants his kingdom to last forever. He made a statue out of pure gold, and everybody was going to bow to that image, and he was going to last forever. And another thing that stood out to me is the way that he had a lack of sympathy. The reason I say lack of sympathy, you can do a temperament test, and it grades you on your sympathy levels. And one of the things that makes that you have a low sympathy score is if you're a proud person. And in Nebuchadnezzar's life, he didn't care much about the people out there. Like, as we see, like, if someone couldn't interpret his dream, he was ready to just kill a bunch of people, even without talking to them and getting their opinion. And if we're proud, we can be the same way. Like, we might, you know, in a husband and wife relationship, if you think that my way is best, you might not even listen to the other person's opinion. In different areas of our work and our church, and if we think our way is the best, if we have an elevated thought of ourselves, we don't listen to the other person. And by me saying lack of sympathy, I'm not saying that we just have sympathy and compassion all the time. There's truths, and there's rights, and there's wrongs, and those things still stand, but it's good not to be blinded by being the top dog that we have to smash everything that gets in our way. Like King Nebuchadnezzar did. So another thing is friction. In Proverbs, it says that a proud person, Proverbs 13:10, where there's strife, there's pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. So with Nebuchadnezzar, we almost don't see the strife there, because he was the type of guy that he was like a bulldozer. If you opposed him, he'd just push you out of the way, and he didn't even have that dialogue. But strife a lot of times comes in when we feel like our opinion is the best, and we don't listen to the other person. And the other first one is self-sufficient. So Psalms 10:4 says, the wicked through pride will not seek after God. And we see how that Nebuchadnezzar, he became very self-sufficient. He didn't need anybody. He didn't need God. He thought he didn't need God. And when he spoke and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by my might, by the might of my power, and for the honor of my majesty? When he said that and just was putting God out of the picture, that's when the voice spoke immediately and said, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And in Proverbs, we also read in Proverbs 16:8 that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And God hates pride. Proverbs 6:16 says, these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination to him, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. So God hates pride, and we don't want to have that in our life. It's something that can creep in, and we don't even realize that we have pride, except we have a self-sufficient attitude. Then we look at Daniel's life as he was living here in Babylon. It's so impressive to me how that a young man can come into Babylon, a godless place, and, you know, as around 17 years old, stand for truth. And pretty soon, they saw that God's hand was on him and that he had a perfect spirit. And he rose up to be in the second in command. And just different times when Daniel trusted in the Lord with all his heart and didn't lean on his own understanding is when he first got there, and he was stood up for what was right and what he knew God wanted them not to eat the king's meat. And the other time is when Daniel told the king that he'll show him the interpretation of the dream. He was trusting in God for that. And Daniel's three friends didn't bow to the image. They didn't compromise. They were trusting in the Lord with all their heart, even no matter what it cost them. And Daniel prayed three times a day, as it goes on in the story. Daniel prayed three times a day and continued even after a decree was made that nobody is allowed to pray to anybody except the king. He still prayed to God. He could have stayed back and not prayed in his window, but he didn't compromise. He kept on seeking God. And another time was, you know, when Daniel was thrown in the lion's den, I'm sure he was trusting God for whatever the outcome is then too. And Daniel was faithful in little things and big, and he was about 90 years old when the book of Daniel ends. And Daniel lived a life of no compromises, and his connection to God and his prayer life is what kept him faithful. Because if you imagine being in top command in a heathen country like Babylon for about 70 years, he spanned four different kings, and he was faithful. I don't think any negative thing about Daniel. And the only way he could do that is by having a connection with God and trusting in God and not allowing pride to get in his heart. And that's what kept him faithful. I also had a story I wanted to share with you. I recently was reading in God's Smuggler. It's a book by Brother Andrew. It says about some of the stories from when he, let me see here. Well, Andrew grew up in Holland, and this story took place when he was about 17 years old. He was the fastest runner in his town, and he could easily run 5 to 10 miles. He'd just strike out for a run. He loved adventure, and when he was 17, he applied and joined the army. There was a war going on as Indonesia was fighting for independence from the Netherlands. And on their first combat mission, they went to relieve a group of commandos that had lost about 3 out of every 4 of its men. And he was in the battlefield for about 2 years. And during that time, he was a pretty arrogant young man. One of the things he did and some of his friends is they got yellow hats because they wanted to pull attention to them. It was like a signal that they were sending out, like, here am I, shoot me. And I'm just going to read you a little letter that he wrote home to a friend of his. He says, I'm so lonely tonight. I wish you were here. I wish I could look right into your eyes as I say all these things and know that you still liked me or at least didn't condemn me. You wrote me once that I should pray. Well, I haven't. Instead, I curse. I know words I never heard in Holland. I tell filthy jokes. The worse I feel, the harder I can get the guys laughing. I'm not the person you think I am. This war used to bother me, but it doesn't anymore. When I see dead people, I shrug. People we have killed, not just soldiers, but ordinary working men and women and children. I have no desire for God. I don't want to pray. Instead of going to church, I go to the pub and drink until I don't give a hoot. That's just part of a letter that he wrote, just to give you an idea of what kind of young man this was. He was just a haughty young man out there wearing his yellow hat, going to the army, and just living. And it's pretty vastly different from what Joseph was as he went into Babylon as about the same age. But one day, he was in the battlefield, and they were surrounded on 3 sides. And it was a pretty intense battle, and he got shot in the leg. He fell, and he couldn't get back up. And he looked, and he saw a bullet hole through his ankle, through his boot, and blood was coming out. And so he couldn't get up, and someone helped him scoot into a trench and got him out of there, got him to the hospital. And he also had a bullet hole through the top of his hat. But it didn't hit his head. And so now he's laying in the hospital. And while he was laying there, he actually discovered when they brought him his belongings that somebody had sent his letter. He used to write these letters just to express his feelings. And he had never meant for that letter to get sent. But after he got hurt, someone sent his letter for him. And so as he was laying there now, he was thinking. And that's where he met Jesus. He had a Bible that somebody, I think this person sent a Bible with him. And he read it, and he had asked the caretakers, you know, why they're so happy. And they said, oh, it's because of that book beside you there. Someone had brought a Bible out of his pack and set it beside him. And so he met Jesus. And later he went to a mission school to learn how to be a missionary. And at that mission school, one of the things they did was they would send people out to go into the land, and they'd give them £1 when they go. And when they would return, they would have to give that pound back. So while they were gone, all their bus fares, their places to stay, their food, everything they had to get by faith. And so there was 5 in his group. They trusted God, and when they need something, they would pray. And at first he was like, oh, we'll have to take lots of offerings. But they weren't allowed to take offerings. They weren't allowed to even mention that they need money. So God provided for them. And just one of the instances of when God provided for them is they were holding a meeting, and there was a lot of young people there, several dozen young people, and they wanted them to come back the next night for another service. And so one of the people in their team popped up and said, "Hey, if you come tomorrow night at 4 o'clock, we'll have tea." And the others were sort of shocked because they didn't really have money to buy tea. And they were all sort of worried how they would, they didn't have cups, only 5 cups. And so right away, a couple people from the group offered to bring some tea. They offered to bring some cups. But the one thing that wasn't really having tea is unless you had cake, and they had no money to buy cake. So they weren't sure how they were going to get that. And the next day it was 3 o'clock, and then it was 3:30, and they were just not sure how they were going to get a cake. And this lady had showed up at the church, and she had offered, "Hey, can I get anything? Can I do anything to help?" And they were like, "Well, we're just trusting God to provide." They didn't want to say that they need a cake, but they really needed the cake bad. And at 3:45, the mailman came, and he had a big box. And he said, "Hey, it's not really time to deliver this, but I saw it sitting at the post office, and I didn't want it. It looked like some food, so I didn't want it to spoil. So I just thought I'd run it out quick today so it doesn't sit there." And here it was 15 minutes before, and he slowly opened the lid. Here was a nice, big, moist chocolate cake that somebody had sent to him as a gift. And they didn't realize what they needed, but God just miraculously supplied that for them. And so after, you know, he finished mission schools, through the process of time, God brought him to the place where he would go into Russia, go into Romania, China, all different places in communist lands, and he'd smuggle Bibles in. And I think for 35 years he did that. And God always provided for him. And it was pretty risky to try to smuggle Bibles into these communist places because Bibles were banned, and there was churches there that didn't even have one Bible, not even one for the pastor. And so they would just go in faith. And this one time, he was coming up to the border in Romania, and there was 6 cars, I believe, in front of him. And he thought, "Oh, this should be quick," because there wasn't a long line. But it took 4 hours just for those 6 cars to go through. And the cars in front of him, he sat there and he watched them dismantle the cars, take the hubcaps off, pull parts off the engine. And, you know, some of them they spend an hour on, some of them 30 minutes. And he was just sitting there thinking, there's no way. He had hundreds of Bibles for Romania in his car. He was just like, there's no way I can make it through. And one thing he always did is when he went through these checkpoints, he's like, if God can make blind people see, he can make seeing people blind. So he would pray that God makes them just blind. And so he was sitting here watching this and dismantling these cars, and he was like, there's no way they won't find these Bibles. So he just went and reached back in the back seat and he got into one of his secret stashes and got about 6 Bibles and put them right on the front seat because he knew he can't hide them. So he's like, I might as well just do it plain in sight, and I'll just trust God. If God's going to help me through, I'm just going to totally trust him. And he pulled up, and the guy showed him his passport, and he goes to push his door open, and the guy's knee was against the door, and so it didn't go open. And so he just looked at it and said, all good, and gave it back to him. And he was like, he was shocked. He's like, not even 30 seconds had passed, and he was like, he told him to go on, and he was looking in his rearview mirror just to make sure everything was good. And here he was, the other next guy made him get out of the car, and he was dismantling. He was like, that was one of the miraculous stories of how God helped him and how he would just trust God and how he would smuggle Bibles into these places. And so I like that story because it's just a reminder that God today, he's just the same as he was 2,000 years ago, and that he still hears us when we trust in him, when we face big challenges, He cares about us. There's one place in the Bible, there's one thing that we can be proud about. Jeremiah 9:23-24 says, "Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord." If we understand and know God, then we'll trust in the Lord, because we know his ways, we know how he is, and we'll lean on him, and he'll direct us. And if you don't know Jesus today, if you don't know him as your Savior, today's the day to turn to him. And Friday, when we had stopped by at the sleigh ball's place, when we walked in, Linda said, "He finished well." And finishing well is the key. And we can't wait until the last of our life to start following God and to start putting our trust in him. Because if we want to finish well, we have to do that today. And Satan wants to get us to get our eyes off of Christ. He wants us to become self-sufficient. But let's not do that, but look to Jesus for our strength. Let's have prayer. Father, I just want to thank you for your love to us. Thank you that you know the number of hairs on our head. Thank you that you know our frame, and that we can trust in you, and that you still hear us and you direct our path even today. And I just ask your blessing on each one here. Guide us and direct us in Jesus' name. Amen.